Blog Talk Radio.
Shy one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
Wednesday evening. Welcome to another Hump Day Buffet. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, Senior Man. We invite you, as always, to another session with the chefs as the Hump Day Buffet is being laid out. A Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. Couldn't get that off, right? Oh, sound like Scooping. Soul Tree Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good stuff. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie, down in Rich, Virginia. Our brother D. Orlando Ledbetter, rep in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Professor Fred Witter out of North Kakalaki. Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, we should hear from soon, as several seasons will be commencing soon, as well as the rest of the gang, and my line mates, Gary Norris Gray and Sonny McLean, to give you a little Popsicle Brothers action maybe today. Always, we start out with our main man, that erudite rascal, bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, Gene?
Boy, I'll tell you, it's been a crazy week this week, boy. I'm so serious.
Gee.
I know you wanna talk about Popsicle Brothers, but before we do that, I just wanna give a little tidbit about what happened at the Academy Award.
Go ahead.
I want people to think about this. We have to recognize the emotional, psychological, and physical state of what was going on. And I am as angry with Chris Rock as I have a Will Smith. And this is the reason why. Number one, my mama taught me this lesson. When you're in public, act like you've been there. Don't create a scene. Now, we need to understand what is happening here, and rooted as deep as 400 years of commitment to black endurance, black marginalization, black silencing, and black stereotyping. That was all in play that night. All that. And if people were smart, they would have came to Chris Rock. Chris Rock, I say, look, you may not like Dana Pinkett Smith, but respect her, because these are black sisters. You may not like Dana Pinkett Smith, but respect her because she is our sister. And respect Will Smith because he is our brother. And support Will Smith because he's our brother. I don't even know that.
Well, you know, I aired all this out early this week. And I really want to close the door on this because...
Yeah.
The actual slap wasn't as much to our collective souls as it was just white supremacy taking another time to laugh at us. And no matter what's up, Team White Supremacy is always on the case for whatever they want to say. And this is the last time I bring this up. Whatever they want to say about Chris Rock, he's a comedian. His job is to observe. His job is to make statements about things he sees, makes observations. And
yes,
that's the beginning and the end of it. Comedians,
Michael, here's the thing. And this is where African Americans have to step up. What I mean is this. As a brother, I will not attack another brother. As a brother, I will not attack another sister. And when you respect each other and not become, and like my mom said, act like you've been there before, right?
Let me say this right now.
A old Indian saying, listen, or your tongue will go deaf.
Well, you know what? There's an old black saying, and that is, when you say what you say, mean what you say, and be what you say. In all honesty, Chris Rock didn't do anything wrong. He's paid to be an MC. Comedians by nature are edgy. He wanted to make a good showing, and he made an observation and an exact, and actually it brought forth laughter. All the other stuff that escalated from there, that's a separate issue, and we took that to a place far beyond what we expected over this weekend. You, me, Tony, who's on the line right now, you on your show. But ultimately, what this was about was the simple fact that the man was doing his job. If somebody got butt hurt behind that, so be it. You know the nature of what he's supposed to be doing. He wasn't out and out trying to disrespect. He just said what he said in the course of doing what he was doing, which was his job. Now, all the other stuff, I know you have your feelings about it too. I know Tony does as well, but after all the other stuff, it adds up to the fact that there were some things that rubbed the wrong way because there was the ring of truth about not just what was said, but what was felt. And Marley said, he who feels it knows it. And it was most definitely felt. And because it was felt, you had to accept the feelings of that and let it go. Because they enjoyed the fact that they were able to get their yayas off of seeing a black man broken down. They can say what they want to say about Jada Pinkett Smith, but ultimately, this was another case of somebody getting broken down because you can't get out clean. And not that he's leaving anytime soon. You can't get out clean because they don't want you to get out clean. They want to make sure that somewhere, somehow, there's a blemish that would make it seem as if, you know what? He was good at what he did. But, and you know by now how we feel about those butts. Tony McClain is in the mix as well. Tony, I know I want to put a wrap to all this, but what do you say to this?
I'm done talking about it. It's baseball season.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's true. It is baseball season. So I tell you what. Let's do 80 seconds around the world in 80 seconds, and we'll get into the baseball stuff. But right now, you know what's happening. Russia, Ukraine, they're still fucking with each other. They're still fucking with us because they're extorting money. You know, if somebody farts the wrong way, World War III will begin in earnest. As to the Supreme Court, they will vote later on this week. And I'm happy, Ms. Jackson. Ooh, you are for real. What can I tell you? They won't get away with all that shit. When you get down, and then you get with it. So you'll have your turn when you get to D.C. and settle with the Supremes, because you're going to be one of them. Diana Ross, notwithstanding. And you'll have a chance to say what you need to say. I got Radio Reggie on the line. Reggie.
Yes, sir.
Can you
Peace and blessings, African. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Peace and blessings. Deacons for Defense of Justice.
Well, what's on your mind, brother?
Well, you know, still the fallout from the Will Smith situation, where I knew that it was just a matter of time that the young man she had a tryst with, as she called it, let's just say she screwed a kid that was same age, a close age to her son. Let's just be real about it. And and now he's looking at multiple book deals, multiple tours, and if she thinks that she got dogged out by the comedians on the circuit before with Tony Rock, and we know what Tony Rock said, I ain't got that much to lose. There's 10 of us Rock brothers. Now, Mike, you up north, and T, you up there in Connecticut, that was me like a silent shot was. Don't let the cops take care of it. We'll take care of it.
Yep.
That's what it sounded like to me. So I don't know. It might be this year. It might be next year or wherever. But something's
up. I'm with you. I am with you. The one thing we have to remember before all this shit blew up was the fact that they went to Chris Rock and they said, do you want us to arrest this motherfucker? We can arrest this black ass right now. You can press charges. Come on. You want to press charges? And Chris Rock said no. In saying no, he respected Will Smith. He respected this situation because it went somewhere, or it had the potential to go somewhere it wasn't going to go. So, to pick up from there, Tony, it's baseball season. So, break up the Gas House Gorillas and everybody else that's involved. What's with the Carrick Mead baseball today?
Well, there've already been two rainouts, and one game's already been pushed back. So this is what we're getting early.
T-back baseball. Yeah, all right.
Must be April because they already got three rainouts in, and they haven't. And no one's throwing a pitch in
it. They started. They got rainouts. Hey, Tony, what is the Mets doing this year?
They got a chance to do some things. I mean, I'm definitely looking forward. You know, I'm not ready to. You know, unfortunately, we got they ought to change the name of Flushing to Chicken Little, because everybody's already panicking and whatever, and they haven't played a game yet.
With that big payroll y'all got, they're expecting some victories.
Well,
I ain't talking about the pitch. I'm talking about going all the way.
Well, look, make the playoffs first. And then we can do some. Then we can talk. But we'll make the playoffs, because talking it, whatever is new. It's to me what I think. You know, the first basically full season for a full DH in both leagues. I'm looking forward to that. I would be the one thing I would look for. To see how the National League and American League overall averages, batting averages, will they be more in line now because of the universal DH? I think they will. I mean, the American League may still have a higher batting average, but
yes.
I think, just put it this way, I'm not sure what the overall difference was last year, but I would think that at the very least, the overall National League batting average is probably going to go up.
I think so.
Like 15, 20 points at the very least. Maybe even more so. But see, here's the thing people forget. And this was in, you know, the DH was always optional. Your pitcher can still hit. If you're comfortable with your pitcher hitting.
He can hit, yeah.
You know, uh-huh. Because see, I understand the Ohtani hype, and it's great. I think I think it's amazing. But the thing is, if you're comfortable with your pitcher hitting, you can still do that. It's just that the National League not doing the DH makes apartheid, you know, look like Candyland at this point in time right now. It's, you know, they were the last, I mean, think about it. Every professional league in baseball uses the DH except with the exception for the National League. And in many ways, I think they should be ashamed of themselves because on the one hand, you want to say, you want to pat yourself on the back for having Jackie Robinson break the color barrier. But you're still playing, you were still playing apartheid on the field. Now we can get into the whole apartheid on and off the field as well, but that's what we got. But remember, we got 6-7 months for that, so we can, you know, whatever. But
true that.
I think, put it this way, if there are still people kicking and scratching and whatever about, oh, you know, if you're really gonna lose sleep because you're not gonna be able to see Zach Greinke hit, you need to get a damn hobby.
You got that right. You know, it's funny. We've had in this DH era in the American League, we've seen the emergence of teams that are straight hitters. I mean, everybody on the team can rake, but they just can't pitch. The Texas Rangers forever had like 1,500, 300 hitters, but rarely did they have somebody who could strike folks out. And in this new DH situation.
And they're actually trying to change that now because they actually, even though they added, you know, they added some more to that lineup, they're trying to pitch. And see, even in this little mini hot stove / spring training, we've seen some teams very quietly put together. Now, we've had the other extreme where basically the A's and the Reds have basically become witness protection. But you look at teams like the Twins, you look at Seattle, I wouldn't even be surprised if the Cubs become relevant again this year because they said, here's the thing. The extra carrot out there this year is the extra playoff bit. So yes. Now, and see, I found out now the trade deadline this year is August 2nd. It's actually a little later this year than. And so in a sense, there's going to be a lot of hand wringing in the sense where let's say you're a team that's within, say, 3-4 games of the last wild card late July, early August. Do you go for it? Do you say let's try and see if we can get in and make a run, or do you just sort of stand pat? Now, another team who is sort of in that they're not that far away from doing something is Detroit, the Detroit Tigers. Now the Tigers have been taking it on.
I ain't heard that name in years.
Exactly. Now again, I'm not saying they're going to win the Central, but when you look at who they've acquired during the last over the winter, and what they already have, they're already a young team. Now that division, you've got the White Sox are clearly the class of that division as of right now. They have some issues as well. The Guardians are, you know, rebuilding. Kansas City, it seems like they've been rebuilding as well. But Detroit could be one of those teams where they may not win the thing, but they may have a lot to say with who does. And
AT, I know you're a role, but Pujols has a little problem off the field. I'm sure you heard about the situation he's going through, right?
Vaguely, I think, you know, again, I think it's somewhat small potatoes. It's interesting that St. Louis is bringing him back. He's basically said that this is it for this year. He's about almost a couple dozen homers away from 700, and it's going to be a little tougher to do it because they basically have said he's going to be a part-time player. But I think he'll be all right.
Think he get tore up about the women when basically his ex-wife had brain surgery and he's serving the divorce papers in a hospital?
That's cool.
You would think that he would have
pulled a
new
Gingrich on us.
Yeah, well, you'd think he would have taken a step back on that, but I don't, and again, this is just me. I don't think it'll be that big of a factor, to be quite honest with you. I could be, look, I'm willing to admit to be wrong in this as well.
Yeah, I just said that with what's going on with the Washington football team and Daniel Snyder with sexual harassment, then we'll see the NFL protocol, how they say women sit down and don't be heard. Now we got Pujols pulling a new Gingrich. You know, you can't underestimate the economic dollars of the female fame. We've seen that they buy more merchandise and they take the kids to the games and everything. Like I say, the females in this new era are starting to getting upset and saying they're getting disrespected, and they're going to let you know about it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Tony.
Yes, sir.
I heard you mentioning everybody else. You know that I'm a Pirate fan, and I didn't hear you mention them.
What's up, Ambassador?
And you know that you said trade deadline is August 2nd.
Yes.
Yeah, Pirates will be busy then.
But see, if you're serious about winning, you're going to be out there before the 4th of July. So somewhere between Easter and Veterans Day, the Pirates will probably sell anybody that has any good that they got to pay money.
The thing with them is they've come out and basically said, you know, it's all about, you know, they're going to bring up a bunch of they actually have like two of the three best prospects in all of baseball. And both of them are going to begin the season on the roster.
But the Washington Nationals are doing the same thing.
There are a lot of teams this year that are gonna use this season to just basically see what they've got and this accordingly. Now the thing, the difference between the Nationals and the Pirates is that the Nationals in a sense do have a superstar to build around with Juan Soto.
And don't be surprised
right
if they get rid of him. With that payroll,
I don't think they'll get rid of him because you still have to have a face of a franchise there, and I think
I'll mention one name, the young man that's playing with the Philadelphia Phillies right now that used to be there.
Well, but here's the thing though, and what have they done since he left? Remember, they won a World Series without him. I'm not saying he was the one that held them back, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
You still, you know, unlike some of these teams that, in a sense, don't give a damn, I think because
Baltimore Orioles continue.
The thing is, they've been, you know, if nothing else, they've been consistent with their rebuilds. You know, they haven't
18 years now, right?
actually, it hasn't been. I mean, it hasn't been as long as folks say. It was just that when they've played so bad, it just seems like it's 18. Because even like with the Pirates, if they allow these kids to prosper, they've got them for the good of their own team. But it's just, but see, and this is why I always take the player side in regards to lockout, strike, or however you want to say it, because during the lockout, they were crying and bitching and moaning about how much money they don't have. Meanwhile, literally two seconds after it goes, after the strike ends, they sign a deal with Apple TV. They sign a deal with Amazon Prime, and you see all these players that got signed before the lockout and even after the lockout with trades and what have you. You know, I mean, look at what the Braves didn't even try to negotiate for Freddie Freeman and let him walk.
So they also signed a deal with Peacock for early Sunday morning game. End of the day,
it's the teams that, you know, within baseball, there's a handful of teams that you know are going to spend some cash to do it, but they're going to put the money back in there. Unfortunately, with teams like Kansas City, with teams like Pittsburgh or what have you, they want to take basically, for, and lack of a better word, they want to take baseball's welfare and then bitch and point the finger at, you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers, and what have you. Now, you know, it takes every bone in my body to say anything nice about those assholes from the Bronx.
I couldn't believe that. Look at the phone. I said, wow.
Seriously, though, end of the day, the Yankees still put their money into the teams. There are certain teams you know what they're going to do and what they're not going to do.
That's true.
What's going on in Oakland is not even money. It's not even Moneyball. They're not even trying to do anything. At least Moneyball, they were trying to bring these guys in. They are. I mean, if put it this way, if they can rent out the soda machine like they did in the movie, they probably would if they could.
Yeah, but Mike, real quick, I know we're rolling, but I got permission to ask the professor a quick question talking about money. Notre Dame's going to be playing Tennessee State in football this year. How is that going to help Tennessee State from a historical point of view, Professor?
It's not.
That's my point. Notre Dame already got a TV contract, so how is that going to help?
Notre Dame has the TV contract, Their contract is so good to them that they won't even join the league that they participate in.
Okay.
Take that to another level and say, well, how much is Tennessee State going to get paid to take that ass with it? Because
you're paying $1 million, it ain't nothing.
No, I mean, it should be more than $1 million. That's why they pay these white schools to come up there and take an ass with
it. That's right.
So, I never really quite got the money gains, because in some cases you had to deduct expenses out of your money. So, somebody a few years ago, they had actually like a breakout of money and this kind of stuff. And we were going over there in the press box. But this has been about 10, 12 years ago. Anyway, the question was, why are you all taking this money and an ass whooping, and then you got to come out of your money with travel expenses? So you don't fly to the game, you bus to the game. It was only like 70 or 80 miles away. You still see white schools will fly. They will fly, okay, on a private plane. Okay, take that money.
Southwest, here we come.
Sometimes it's Jim Bob Jet. because I remember back in the day, Indiana flew on two planes that were privately owned. They said each plane had about 30 people, and between the team and staff, they flew on these two planes. I forget what kind they were, but they were jets. Anyway, looking at the fact that you're playing Notre Dame, if you know, I would love to be that team that they got to play that next week, because they're going to be all hurt up. Because you're going to have to play first and second string the whole game just to keep up. And I can bet you they're going to do a spread offense, three or four receivers. They're going to go deep with a tight end over the middle
and run underneath
in the first quarter. From that point on, it's going to be trap left, trap right, trap left, trap right, sweep left, sweep right, reverse, sweep left, sweep right, trap. They're going to run the poor guys in the dirt. Because when I used to coach for the Army, we play JV teams for colleges like East Carolina, NC State, and a couple of others. We play Shawan, which at that time was a two-year school, and some others, including Federal State. And we could stay with them, say, for the first quarter. Things got kind of rough about mid-second quarter because we could go basically one D plus one half. Okay? After that, the guys that played for us, for the most part, well, all of them that played for us were soldiers, except two years, I think we had two guys that were civilians. Okay? You got guys that are 20 to 25 versus 18 to 22. There's a difference, especially when these guys.
Young bodies.
especially these guys who are 22 to 25 have in some cases been out of. I mean, they do military PT and all that kind of stuff, and you know what the 80-something shuffle and that kind of stuff. But they don't, except for the guys who were Rangers and Special Forces. Now, they were tight to a degree, but they were not used to running like that. Now, they could run all day.
Yeah,
but they couldn't
hit and run.
They could speak all day. I would love to be the team that he got to play that next week, because if they play Saturday, anytime between 11 Saturday and 9 Saturday night, they're not going to be really able to get on the field until Wednesday.
No, Fred, but that's what makes your question. That's what makes your question the most important. How much are they getting for this ass whipping? Because they are going to get their ass whipped, and how much are paid for? No doubt, they're going to take a whipping in this one for real. But
I think they're getting 500,000, if I heard right. I think they're getting
500,000. That's what Delaware State used to bypass a league game, a conference game.
Hey, look.
To just get the check.
Virginia Tech gave Florida A&M that about 10 years ago when they played. And this Virginia Tech, which ain't no powerhouse.
We know the mercenary aspect of this pay for ass whipping thing, but most important is the question of once it's done, the after effect. You know, we saw Appalachian State get almost not blacklisted, but they avoided them like the plague because they didn't want that chance to have that ass whipped when they put them up. No, you're not getting this. So a lot of schools got looked over, just like you brought up. Reggie, just like you brought up Fang Mitchell in the fact that when you came up with that upset, nobody wanted to touch Fang and the team for years. They didn't want that scandal,
yeah.
And they
yeah,
had to scar get their ass up on
South Carolina when it beat South Carolina, yeah.
South Carolina problem was they lost to Coppin, but they also lost to Southern.
Mm.
Remember that? They had the likes. I think they had to see who was it? Bobby Fields, I think, was on that team. Ben Jobe was coaching, and Ben Jobe left South Carolina, University of South Carolina, to take over at Southern, and he did to Bobby Crimmins in the
Georgia Tech. I remember that.
He had tried to get them to go this way, and they, as good white folks will do, well, no, you can't run all the time. If that's what, mm-hmm. if that's how you play, that's how you run. And, you know, and interestingly, if you go back and check the stats, when South Carolina played their next game, they had guys in foul trouble in the first 10 minutes.
Yep.
Wink, wink.
Yep. No question. Gentlemen, I need to switch gears and get into football because we all know the annual meeting of the Liars Club, otherwise known as the NFL Draft, is going to convene in a little over 3 weeks. Now, Professor, and good evening, by the way.
Good evening, y'all.
We've seen Steve McNair come in on the crest of proper exposure that rightfully garnered him a first-round selection. Now, in this particular draft, we got Malik Willis out of Liberty. We know he's got the potential to raise some highlights, but there should be some sand raised as well because I truly believe that some Dick Dastardly stuff has been done to many of the would-be field generals before they even step on stage. Now, of course, it's no fault of their own, but we know this apparatus that they call the draft has gone too far with character assassination, given its proper place since the treatment of Cameron Newton, and it hasn't changed since. It's been less vindictive. But it's still there. And every time someone says negative, it usually means minus in the checkbook and minus in the bank account. So I need to ask everybody on the thread, what in the wild world of sports is going on with this?
Business as usual, pretty much. You know, over the next 2 to 3 weeks, and like you said, the Liars Club is probably, you know, the only people who are going to be lying more than them are Congress and the House over the next 2-3 weeks, as I always like to say. But they're going to try to marginalize the HBCU guys. If you're not from like a Power Six conference or what have you, you know, Kuiper and the other idiot will have their hands out basically saying, you know, I'll say something nice if you grease my pocket. Now,
exactly.
We have not been able to physically prove that, but I think it's pretty obvious. I think if you go back over the years and you see how they talk certain guys up and then all of a sudden they do seem to rise in the drafts, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I put it this way. I would love to check their bank account 3 weeks before the draft. Let's just put it that way.
Now, Fred, we got an interesting situation with the young man who also happens to dabble in astrophysics, in addition to wanting to play quarterback in Brother Dobbs. Now, I know he was on the Steeler roster for a couple of teams and stuff, but he hasn't been around for a while because the opportunity hasn't been presented to him. But I got to think somebody in the league knows about him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the league, period. Is this another case of brother being too smart for football or what?
Basically, that seems to be the rule of thumb for this. He is actually he was released by the Steelers.
Okay, he's with Jacksonville. He's with Jacksonville now.
No. He's actually with Baltimore.
Really?
With Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
You know, I mean, Urban Meyer was down there with Jacksonville. So, I mean, no. But anyway, yes, he had a tryout with that team in Baltimore. I refuse to call them. I watched the game with them today, and they're dirty, all that other stuff. Anyway, that's where he was. And that's where he was a little over a week ago. They didn't say how he came out, but, you know, they're returning their first and second quarterbacks. So, and someone I know who knows him, you know, they have mixed feelings about his situation simply because in this gentleman's mindset, he said, "Yeah, he's too smart for football." Because for one reason, if he gets hurt, you know, this young man has a brilliant mind. He thinks so far out of the box with this thing that when he was in school, he practiced mostly for the benefit of his teammates, much more so than himself. Because, remember when Russell Wilson asked for a playbook and then he flew to Wisconsin to try out Well, he said, "You think Russell Wilson's smart? This young man has helped put rockets into outer space and brought them back.
Okay.
He has sent stuff to the space station." Mm-hmm. And he said, "At some point, you know, and money is not an issue. So at some point, he's going to say, 'Okay, screw y'all. I'm going to go out and really make a name for myself.'"
Right.
And have you heard, you know, some of the situations that have come from your man from Florida State about who had gone from being too smart for the NFL to being a prominent neurosurgeon?
Yeah, Myron Moe.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you say, you know, if you go back through two time and look, there was a lot of guys out there who were smart like this who also played football, and because of the way the opportunity, you didn't hear a lot about them outside of football. I mean, like in the business world, I think, because a lot of what they did was done in the black community, and the white folks are oblivious of what they did. Because for those who don't know, Arthur Ashe's mentor, Dr. Johnson, was a brilliant doctor. He just played football at Lincoln. Dr. Eaton. He was actually a dental surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I think, he helped bring up Hatfield Gibson and Arthur Ashe, because he was his family had money, so he didn't play no ball. He played tennis.
Gotcha.
He had a full double tennis court in his backyard. So did Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it's going to play out, so basically, this young man is going to truly make a name for himself in the outer limits much more so than he would ever possibly.
No joke.
Mean.
Well, see, here's what I'm looking for. Now, we all saw how genuine it seemed they were curious about Steve McNair. You know, they went down to Alcorn and they were like, "Is this guy a real deal?" They saw the numbers. He got the exposure. And then he came out here. He didn't get a chance to show his true self when he got into the league, but he played well enough to force them to grudgingly give half an MVP to him during the course of his career with his play. Now, we will doubtless see that coming out of the HBCU locker room, and I don't think there's anybody in place who will carry a word with the weight of Coach Rob and say, y'all tell us, what do y'all want in a quarterback? We can build it. You know, we can hook you up. They will make the excuse that Mr. Willis out of Liberty is one of those who do you play against guys, but who do you play against? That's exactly what they're going to ask sometime these next 2 weeks. Tony?
In all likelihood, they've already asked that because what do you have here? And see, this ain't okay. From as Paul Harvey say, the rest of the story. Okay, this ain't nothing new. They did it for 747. They did it for Jefferson Street Joe. You go down the list. They did it for because they've been doing the same shenanigans, 60, 70 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Since blacks started playing in the NFL, it was always but, asshole, but.
Yep.
And because of that, you had black folks couldn't play guard. Black folks most definitely couldn't play center. Well, they don't have real centers. In these black schools, they use them little boys who double as middle linebackers, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, they still function. And when you take the time, go back and look through time at all the guys who were in the NFL, Snake Riley, who could have played NFL football. Had they been given the opportunity. Okay, here's a man who changed positions from quarterback that he never played to start at cornerback his rookie year. Where is the mental short or academics? We mentioned about Rhodes Scholar, remember?
Yep.
Snake Riley, had he chosen to skip football, NFL, he was a candidate to be a Rhodes Scholar.
No, I remember that. I remember the Cincinnati Bengals also giving up 2 number 1 draft choices for some non-playing white boy named John Stofront. Yes, and they knew Riley was quarterback.
And the sad thing is the powers that be are more willing to let some nondescript white boy who is, if he's at least 6'3 and weighs at least 215 pounds, we can make what we want out of him because he will do exactly what we tell him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't work with Joe Namath.
No.
Remember who he played for?
That's
he
right.
He played for Bear Bryant, who ran the wishbone, which to the NFL was no, we can't play that. Quarterbacks get hurt. You know?
That's true.
He was already hurt. Come on, because see. Out of the mouths of these fools that call themselves experts, where there is some numbnuts who like to get out there and to see their, it's just like this, what they call this stuff, bracketology that we just went through for the last month.
Oh, God. Oh, please. That's an analytics.
Using the best analytics that you can, right? How many of these analytical expert St. Peter?
Mm-hmm.
Most brackets fell apart that first 2 weeks.
Yep.
You had people ready to jump off buildings and everything else because they were so wrong. You know,
the upset. Yes, half the brackets were done.
Mm-hmm. And you get this: you had a white school with a few black players and some I'm not sure of, but you had this school that was the size, well, that's the size of some graduating classes at HBCU, some HBCU.
That's right.
HBCU.
The community school is not that big. St. Peter's is not that big. Yes.
Because I think they said they got 2,100. You know, come on.
Something like that.
They don't. Mm-hmm. They barely have a gym. They don't have a training table. Mm-hmm. Just go ahead and go down the list of what they don't have.
Right.
And you know where were they?
Yeah.
I got such a kick out of. I got somebody waiting for me just to call, just so he can give all his excuses. Real quick, Professor.
HBCUs don't have no more excuse now after that run that St. Peter made. I mean, training facilities, any HBCU D1 school in basketball has no excuse now to get their program together.
You're wrong there. You don't have an excuse if you're an HBCU Division I or Division II. Remember, Talladega ran, played for the NAIA championship.
Yeah. I think they won it, didn't they?
No. They lost. They lost in the finals, but that hadn't happened since 87 when West Virginia State lost on a shot, basically a shot at the buzzer.
Yeah, and then of course Cheney women back in the day in the '70s with Jimmy Springer, Coach Dale.
Cheney's men and women won way back in the day because remember John Cheney and Vivian Springer and John Cheney's offices were down or basically across the hall from each other.
Yeah, and they're rolling. But here, my favorite professor. Again, you can't tell me that the HBCU schools' facilities are 10 times better than that little school up in Jersey. I mean, the athletic budget, the facilities, you know, there's no reason why some athletes want to come too.
Reggie, did you not hear? They barely have a – they don't – they're some HBCUs spend more money on recruiting than they have for our athletic budget.
Right.
See, it's okay. I don't know much about that school, but I think their student body is less than 2,500 undergrads, and they also have some graduate students too. But even there, you know, I mean, graduate students don't add that much to your overall athletic program.
It's not a big school.
And you know, because that was one of the things we had on it, the players. I mean, everybody knows the players because they eat in the same cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what it was like when you were at Virginia State? Same thing with me at Winston-Salem State. Half the people I knew at Winston-Salem State because we ate together every day, especially breakfast. And then you take, like the other day there was a thing on one of the over here. And we were talking, there was something posted about one of the old heads that played for Coach Gaines. And everybody, we call him Butch Ed. Well, we all, most of you all would know his name is Eddie Gray. No, to us, he's Butch Ed. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's people that because he played football and basketball.
Yeah.
Quiet guy, boxer, and all that kind of thing. But we all knew him because, you know, when the basketball players came in, he was probably the one who was speaking, keep on going. But we all knew him because of how we circulated through school. But see, the powers that be, because I understand that two or three of the guys that play for St. Peter are entering the portal.
Yeah, the draft. Yeah.
Because I think the coach is already gone. So,
oh, yeah. Some of them might be going to his school where he going to coach at Seton Hall.
The coach is actually gone. But
he's already gone. He signed a contract.
Yeah,
he's gone.
They signed him. They signed him literally 2 days after they were eliminated.
Right.
And look, the whole team went down there, and his whole team went down there, and he introduced them to his new employees, and they gave him a standing ovation.
But if you weigh the commensurate odds of basketball players going to the pros in comparison to football players going to the pros, is a huge despair. And that's why, you know, when there's a showcase like this, you know, it's like the draft. Anybody who's worth getting is going to get got early. They always talk about football players doing this and other position players doing this, but what do we see go in the draft always? Linemen. Offense, defense linemen go immediately because they know you got to build from the inside out. Anybody who's worth the salt, they're going to get picked day one or day two, and any leftovers end up day three. That's what happened in this tournament. You know, St. Peter's just happened to have a plum or two that was so obvious it had to be plucked. You know, and this also goes to style. They play an exciting style. And Tony, to get back to the baseball, my man G is back. You know, what makes for an exciting baseball team? Now, we all grew up playing it. We all grew up watching it. But what makes watching Team A more exciting than Team B? What do you look for?
Being versatile. I mean, you know, you want to see. Look, we're in that chicks dig the long ball era. I get that. But sustaining winning is when you have a balance of pitching and hitting. And I kind of like what the Royals did a few years back because they harkened back to the Negro Leagues. You know, they had their power guys, but they also had a lot of people on that team could run. They had great pitching. Look, pitching is always going to be the great equalizer. You know,
true.
Again, I'm not trying to pick on them, but I think I have to use an example. The Yankees are going to be able to hit with anybody in the league, but until Cole has a Robin to his Batman, they're only going to go but so far.
You're right. You're right. That Texas Rangers 2.0. The year we saw the Yankees pick up everybody and their mama from the farm, and everybody came up stroking line drives, I was like, this is unbelievable. I have Patrick Fraud and Gary Back. I've never seen a team pick up so many reserves and have them pick up their back and beat the shit out of everybody with it ever in my life. But they lost. And they lost how come? Because they didn't have enough arms. So you got to have a style that fits. And that is why baseball is also in further trouble. I like what you said about Kansas City because I was digging the Royals too. I love that go-go style. I love that style that was reminiscent of the Negro Leagues and how they use the defense. Like, when we see a team that we like, defense has to be part of it. Pitching, we know, has to be part of it. But it's hard to pick a team in baseball that has such a defined style that I want to go see these guys. I want to get to the park,
I'll give you one, and they're not in the United States.
Okay.
It's the Blue Jays. Now the Blue Jays went out, and they added to their pitching staff. Look, they just missed the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And see, now they're playing. Now they're playing all the, you know, they're back home now at Sky Dome. I, you know,
I do think splitting the season the way that they had to do last year, going from Buffalo then to Toronto, it may have had a it may have been a factor, but now they know they're going to be, you know, they're going to play 81 game home games in Toronto to go along with the other ones. They went out and so you know they went out and you know added to the pitching staff. They now they took a hit by letting Semien go, but Vladdy Jr. still there. Little Bichette is there. is there? They still have George Springer as well, and the most underrated of the bunch may be Teoscar Hernandez.
You may be right.
The thing is, I would say, at least at the start of the season right now, of the teams in the AL East, they probably, on paper, have the best starting pitching staff in the East.
Now, that's interesting. Patrick, can you hear us?
Live and living color, fellas.
How are you,
hey,
sir?
Patrick. How about Patrick? How about my girl Dawn Staley, man? She getting another raise.
Who's that?
Dawn Staley. What do you think? She getting another raise or what?
Oh my goodness!
Because I'm Friday had Marshall Law in Connecticut after the beat.
They actually allowed us to have meat and cornbread. So we're okay. We're okay.
You know it's. You know, as you know, Reg, ironically, you're talking about the women in the March Madness. There is something that you should, you know, we got to look at what's going on. And in regards to the NIL and March Madness, and also it's alive with sponsorships and endorsements. You know, in college sports, right? Football players have the most in terms of accumulated endorsements and social media followers. Guess who comes second? The women.
Women college. Who's the chick that had a suite? The chick from Connecticut, she had a suite during the Final Four. Now, how they hooked that up?
Paige Burgers. What's it, Paige Burgers is her name? Paige Burgers.
Yeah.
During the March Madness, her social media network made $62,900 because it went by game.
She got robbed.
Oh no! She got the most, and this girl from Louisville came next with $44,000, and two of them got $7,000 just on the social media.
What the hell has happened to my girls in South Carolina? They got to market themselves better.
From Boston. The Boston, I think she did well, didn't she?
She did well. But you know something? With all that money on during the March Madness, you know who got the most money? Two white girls who were twins out in Fresno State. They made this year over $1 million. But guess what they're going to do? Yes. They're tall, white, and blonde. And you know what? That drives white boys crazy. But guess what?
Blonde hair and blue eyes.
They're doing so well at Fresno State. This is where the changes come in, fellas. They're now leaving Fresno State to a bigger school and market to move, not only move their chain, to up their game, but to make
most
more money. You're going to see more of that ever and ever.
Exactly.
So where's Gonzaga going? I know they're ready to leave. Where are they going?
They going nowhere. They got to come back now with another team, with some more players. And guys, last week we had the draft. We have the draft in 2 weeks, which is of course we're all looking forward to. But the other draft is now established even more in the NCAA's week, wherever it is, because there deals will be made for players and everybody else during the NCAA tournament.
Can't wait to hear this.
Interesting.
Now, Patrick, how are they going to assess
what's going on, because like I was saying, the Lions closed meeting at the end of April for the draft. And, you know, we got a couple of brothers who should be first-round considered. But we also know there has been a cabal in methodology in which brothers get their paychecks and the potential earnings chopped up because of preconceived notions or just out-and-out character fascination.
Well, I think the play that they're going to aim for to find out that he uses the wrong type of toilet paper or doesn't wash his hands enough during the day is going to be the brother Willis from Liberty, okay? Or yeah. They'll find out probably he was dating some white girl behind the church at Liberty, and you know that's going to, they're going to find something. Now,
Liberty.
but the trick is they're doing everything they can to get the boy Pickett within the first 5 picks. Now, granted, he's done very well. He's thrown 42 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions. You know, initially when they were talking about his hands were too small, well, his hands were too small to throw 42 touchdown passes.
Yeah, really. Really.
As long as he can
pick up a pen and write his name legibly, he'll be fine.
That's what I'm talking about.
at this point, you know, there'll be some quarterbacks, but everybody's going, from what I sense, and I just got my books today on the draft, everybody's going for defensive ends, and there's a bunch of them, and receivers. Somehow they tried to make the kid from Michigan, the white kid, the number one pick. I'm going, he good, but I wouldn't pick him number one.
He ain't good.
I don't mean to mess with the kid, but I'm getting Mike Mamula flashbacks personally.
Okay. And he think he's better than Mike Mamula, but he ain't overall.
If
I had a chance to take him, I'd take him, but I wouldn't take him in the first 5 picks.
In the first pick,
And they're definitely, of course, had the classic case, finding something wrong with the kid, Thibodeau from out in Oregon, mm-hmm. brother, who was dynamic. Yeah. They find, well, he has a lot of kid problems. Well, who put out that rumor? So we'll see. It starts with him. Now, considering all the draft, considering the local teams, the Jets and the Giants, if they mess up this draft and Lyman,
and they will,
be shot.
Yeah.
And they will.
Yes.
I said, you know, to be honest with you, I'd be more optimistic with the Jets than I would be the Giants, to be quite honest. That's not saying much, mind you.
Yes, the giant brain trust, if you can call it that, has had horrible luck trying to fill positions on the offensive line for the past 4 seasons now. Number one choices they picked have been huge bucks. Yes.
Guess what? 4-5. And guess what pitcher Giants got in the Jets? 4-5.
4-5.
You know it.
I mean, they literally put it out there for them, and you know.
Now we've seen the draft become a road show over the past few years. We've seen them take it from New York to Chicago to Philly. Now they go to Las Vegas. What added dimension, good or bad, are they going to add to this thing? Is Vegas going to be a potential problem because it's Vegas?
No.
Las Vegas? That fine bastion of goodness? Las Vegas?
Well, I can tell you one thing. The Hoochie's going to make more money this week. That's for sure.
I thought I smelled something.
Yeah.
And 2023, you will see the Oakland A's move to Vegas.
About time. They better hurry up.
It, the honeys will be out that evening, all during the week. But yeah, but I will say this. I got word. I just got some information earlier today because I'm checking with a brother I know whose cousin might be is being looked at. They got 22. They're looking at 22 HBUC players. Now, where they're drafted, I don't know, or if they get drafted. But they're seriously looking at 22, and three of them were Jacksonville because Deion has pumped them up, put them in that position. And I think Deion is going to do like the late Eddie Robinson did. Don't come down anymore if you can't at least give him a fair break. So, and I don't know.
Hey, Patrick, do you know anything about this quiet whisper about the Dolphins might be looking at Garoppolo?
At this point, man,
Garoppolo ain't going nowhere.
Calm down, Gary.
Shots fired from Gary.
The sadder thing here in this is that they're never going to give Tua a break, are they? They're just never going to give this kid a break.
They keep messing with his mental psyche. They keep messing with him.
Yep.
Crazy.
We got,
Which got signed from what the guy that played with Denver last year, the quarterback that was
He got signed by Miami.
Teddy Bridgewater.
How
long before he gets that job? You can't tell me that you're trying to get Teddy in there.
Put it this way: the new coach is supposedly an offensive guru. Allegedly. The first thing they asked him.
Ron
Mazzell
was allegedly.
The first thing they asked him was, you know, what about Tua? And they said, well, I believe in healthy competition. So it's like, oh, jeez, here we go.
Healthy competition, my black ass. He doesn't want Tua to get the starting spot. But that's neither here nor there. We all know that they're going to be playing live poker, and they won't have to be looking at dollar bills to say how many of whatever it is they have when they start to speak. We got Eric. Eric, can you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, brother. How you doing this evening?
Let me tell you something. If I hear one more offensive guru, I'm going to jump out the window.
Patrick, offensive guru is basically sort of same thing as blue suede shoes at this point in time right now. And it has just about as much of a meaning.
If he was such an offensive guru, you know, how come they slipped him in the back door for the press conference for the Dolphins?
You.
Come on, man. Stop, right?
There you go. There you go, making sense again, Patrick. There you go, making sense again. There's no room. Damn it, there's no room for that here in the
National
Football League. There's no
room for that in the National Football League. How dare you make them facts? How dare you? How dare you?
And he just happened to be black. Okay. Yeah, have a nice day.
In South Florida, they call that a mulatto.
Patrick, you know how this works. They call that a mestizo strain. Patrick, you know how this works.
If he wins
10 to 12 games, he's the toast of the town. If he goes, I get the math right because we're 17. If he goes 7-10, he's just toast.
The coach of Notre Dame football.
that brother can't
catch a break.
Yeah.
No brother can catch a break. So when one does, we have to protect him. And I'm switching up briefly because I want to talk about, and Gary, I hope you give me some popsicle love with this, how the brothers are doing it on the ice. Now, oh, yeah. The Florida Panthers have won 5 games in which they came back from 3 goals or more. Now, in hockey, you don't come back from 3 goals. Usually, it's a wrap. They're changing goaltenders, and Zamboni is, like, putting piss out on ice or something like that. But the Florida Panthers have been cranking it up. You have a young guy named Anthony DeGlare, who's a forward. He was told by white coach John Tortorella, he can't play. And then he commenced to go kicking his ass in a game while he was in Ottawa by scoring a hat trick, with the third goal being the winning goal. Right now, Anthony DeGlare has 29 goals. And the Florida Panthers are this close to winning 50 games, and their forward, Huberto, is the first guy in their team's history to score 100 points in a season. Now, meanwhile, you also have brothers like Chad Greenway in Minnesota, 6'7", holding it down. P.K. Subban, although
he's
6'7". 6'7".
Get out of it.
6'7". Hey. He's a forward. He's a forward on skates. And now,
he's a student.
Whether P.K. Subban has been in Nashville long enough remains to be seen, but he helped Nashville stimulate their fan base, and Nashville plays a rough checking style. Their defense is very, very good, and they went from Pecorine being their star goaltender to UC Soros. So, to go to the baseball analogy, Tony, there are teams in hockey that are employing definite styles that work for them, and they make themselves very exciting and very visual in terms of fans want to go see these guys play. That's what baseball seems to be missing. There's not a team that's got that kind of jazz that makes you go like, damn, what these cats are doing today? Let me go get my skates.
Yes, I know the team.
And coming off of a lockout, which is also coming off of a World Series where test patterns got higher ratings than them.
Yeah.
This is, you know, Blue's way. What did Pogo say a few years ago? The enemy is us. And that's what baseball has to do. They have to look at themselves in the mirror and see which kind of direction that they're going to go in. And again, it's beyond, you know, the minuscule numbers of black folks playing. It's beyond all that, you know, it's the game in and of itself is just at times very unwatchable. Again, we talked about the whole chicks dig the long ball. Look, I like this. I like to see the home runs too. But again, you've got to have balance. The teams that win consistently are always teams that are balanced. CC, you're making me say way too many things about the Yankees, but I guess I have to say it to prove my point. The thing about those Yankee teams, even in the 90s with Torrey, yes, they had good hitting, but they were balanced. You know, they always had pitching. You know, they basically turned it into a 6 or 7 inning game because their starter would go 6, maybe 7 innings. You bring in, you know, a guy just a bridge between Rivera, and then 9th inning, 1, 2, 3, cue up Frank Sinatra. Yep. Thanks for coming. See you tomorrow night. And that's how they were able to do it. When you look at the teams that win, even looking at the Braves team from this past year, they had a balance of power, they had a balance of pitching. And remember, here's the scary thing about the Braves. They did it arguably without their best player, Ronald Acuña Jr.
That's right.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, it's still, I mean, look, it's just old, you know, it's old and boring, but pitching, defense, and being solid up the middle, you're going to be in the race.
Tony, I'm a diehard Dodger fan all my life, but you know something? The team I said mid last year, and maybe I thought I was on crack, I said, watch out for the Braves. Well.
Yeah. Of all the big moves during the trade deadline, they made the best three. They weren't, again, It wasn't like blockbuster whatever, but all three of them had key roles in the run. You know, Soler from the Royals, of course.
Yep.
Gonzalez, you know, hit some home runs, and also Doc Peterson. But the thing is,
yeah,
this is basically the old Braves in the sense of they have pitching. Now, no, they don't. Now, I'm not ready to say that these guys are the next Glavin, Smoltz, and Maddox. But they don't have to be. They don't have to be. And the thing about it is, they have a balanced bullpen as well. Because again, it's about balance. The thing about it is, there's a reason why the Colorado Rockies will never win a World Series. There's a reason why, until they address their pitching, Texas Rangers will never win a World Series. The current Yankee team right now, after Gerrit Cole, it's a question mark.
And Tony, your boys are bringing in 16 pitchers such a year.
Here's the thing. They basically got Chris Bassett for a lifetime worth of cream of wheat for the A's, and he would given how the injuries and whatever are, he may wind up being either your number two starter or the number three starter. But the thing is, this is a guy that won like 12, 13 games for the A's. They were basically giving him a half a run a game, saying, okay, go out there and do it. But
so add five wins, literally. You can at least add five wins.
Yeah, he basically got, the majority. This might be a bit of hyperbole, but what he basically did was what Steve Carlton did in 72. He won like almost 40% of their games.
Mm-hmm. Well,
people were watch out for the San Diego Padres.
That's true.
They're still butthurt from last year because they felt like last year was their year, but I think the problem with them was that they read too much of their clippings. And I think maybe he's getting it out of the way early this year because he's already hurt. But the kid that's going to be playing for him is apparently pretty decent. So
that's right. But, let's remember, San Diego is a ballpark that dictates pitching and defense. You're not going to have a bunch of 40 home run guys in San Diego. And regardless of what ballpark you're in, the players and management and whoever it is around the team have to understand what style it is that they want to generate that makes for a winning ball club. Eric, how do you feel about it?
I think one of the problems is the fact that I argue with a couple of guys in Jersey City because they're diehard Yankee fans and were pretty good baseball players one time. They despise the fact, and I do too, 100%, of people up in the press box or people in the owner's lounge are trying to dictate how the game was called. And the game was called on analytics and throwing home runs rather than moving base by base. Or the way that we're talking about a game that's played in the pace that makes it exciting, and I think analytics has come in too much to the point. Personally, I've always said if I'm a manager of a team and somebody from the owner's bus call and says what I should do, I said bring your ass down here and I'll go upstairs and take your job.
Look, we all love Stratomatic growing up. Automatic baseball, but there's always a human element, and see, this is the other thing that baseball still doesn't get after all these years. I don't care if you bring in the robot from Lost in Space
and or what have you. The you know, as much as we may get on them, the human umpires are better than these computers. Because here's the thing: all you got to do is find a glitch, and then what?
Yep.
All you got to do is find the glitch.
Tony, get ready. You know they okay that automatic strike zone thing they got this year.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I would do? I find myself a hacker. I find myself a hacker. Because, see, isn't it interesting that they beat Houston to death so long and see, here's the thing. They didn't need any computers or whatever. That was just because they literally did what the 51 Giants did. They broke the system. They broke the system. And see, it's funny. Baseball always wants to play it both ways. They want to tell you about integrity or what have you. Okay,
oh, please.
I believe integrity when you take Gaylord Perry out of the Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much.
Talk to me then.
Every time I call the game, you call the business. That said, gentlemen, which sport, on everybody in the thread, I'd like to answer, which sport has the officials affecting the game the most that you've seen?
Oh, football.
And the NBA is not too far behind.
Yeah.
I mean, hoops is number one because everything's a judgment call. There's no fine line.
Yeah.
I mean, were you in the half arc or were you not in the half arc? Was it a charge?
Yeah.
Was it a block? Was it a reach?
Mm-hmm.
Was
mm-hmm.
the hand on
yeah.
the ball? Was it offensive goaltender? Was it in the cylinder? It's everything in basketball is agreed upon how the game's going to be ref. So, in other words, if a team like, you know, the Bulls, you know, used to get away with just hand checking, you know, like crazy on these teams. You know, they would put Pippen and Jordan and Horace Grant were like Rottweilers out there. You know, I mean, that's the game. I think Utah scored like, I think they shot like 22% or something in one of those games in Chicago. But the way they were refereed, and the way that the Bulls would play for the referees and know who was refereeing, they manipulated that to no end. And when you see referees, back to the basketball thing real quickly, is the fact that you literally, I mean, and it's all swept under the rug. You literally have Donahue just, you know, mentioning point shaving was a basketball invention. There was nothing around football for point shaving. It's always hoop. Right?
Eric,
so,
remember, back to the
collegiate
Eric.
Days.
Eric, remember Norm Van Lier and what they do with defense? You can call Jerry Sloan. They call.
You can, I mean, Clyde Frazier and these guys could guide you around the court.
Let's
with the hand checking, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
what happened is when I so not they changed the rules. So they no one changes the rules like hoop, like basketball. You know, Kareem came in dominating. No, you know, they outruled the dunk. All right, he goes to the sky hook, right, you know, and, you know, develops another weapon. Chamberlain, they wait in the late. There was offensive goaltending was allowed by Chamberlain. And Tex Winter, who was known for the triangle offense, was coaching at Kansas State. He scouted Chamberlain in one of the early games, you know, when he first broke out there. And it's documented, you know, anyone can look it up. And, you know, Will talked about it in one of his books. He's seen Chamberlain take off at the free throw line. He also seen where Kansas was throwing the ball over the backboard, and Will could just go get it. And so he got the rules committee to outrule that, you know. So, in other words, we've seen the game. And then what happened with, you know, the money that the Chicago Bulls were raking into the league, they started shifting the rules, right? They started shifting the rules to favor, you know, a certain style of play that they were playing. You've seen the three-point shot Bird was taking, you know, when he was, you know, first came in the league, they moved it in. They were deep, you know. The first three-point line was a lot deeper than it is now. In the NBA, you have this thing that's really an oxymoron, you know, and it's never talked about much, right? Field goal percentage. So you have a three-point field goal percentage, and you have an in-the-arc three-point field percentage. So they say a guy shooting 47% from three, and then 53% inside the arc, so-called mid-range. Aren't they all field goal attempts?
Mm-hmm.
But they've spliced it and reorganized it, which created the bandwidth for the European players to get jobs.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? So if you
yep.
look at the NBA and the international basketball players, we all agree the best players still come out of the States. But that's not the representation from the NBA.
Right.
So you look at the percentage of players that are there. So basketball is the most contrived. I could go on. I mean, we haven't even hit the iceberg on how the NBA – then remember they changed the ball. Remember Stern brought that new basketball in and it was peeling and cat's hands and bounces.
Oh, the players hated it.
The players hated
it.
They changed the texture.
Yep.
Baseball did a little thing with loading the ball and this, that, and the other. But if you can't get the the bat through the strike zone, it don't matter because everyone out the bullpen has got to throw 100-plus these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
You throw 93 in the bullpen, you can't make it in the Major League Baseball. So everyone's
that's
bringing abnormal heat,
got
you know, from that level. But not in hoops.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So in basketball, you know, you've got these things where a guy can be a stat stuffer and just stacks, but never win. But they've mastered how to utilize these things, right? So, you know, Steph Curry, it took him all these three-point shots to eventually pass Chamberlain as the all-time leading scorer for the Warriors,
that's
but Wilt never shot a three. You know what I'm saying? So all these little manipulations of rules and stats and distance and textures and lane size. Okay, 3 seconds. We can make a 3 seconds call every day
all
in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's being the paint. For like 17 seconds, and then they decide to. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the carry, right? Jordan's so-called game-winning shot. He carried the rock in any language.
Don't forget the push off too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, but of course, but in his language, he didn't push off. But come on, he pushed off. But what always threw me off is like the guy doesn't need any more advantages, right?
Yeah.
But if you allow him with his hand size to turn the rock and palm it, literally.
Yes, he palmed it.
Literally,
now,
and gallop 2 feet and never call it.
One last rule
that blows my mind. So in other words, you'll see a guy run for grab a loose ball, right? Bounce it once, pick it up, and then dribble again. In any other world, that's a double dribble, not the NBA.
That's right.
That's true.
Is double dribble. So I'm like looking at this every time. Like, what are these coaches? Are they on dope or dog food? Because they're not challenging a double dribble, and it's obvious.
Here's a question, guys.
You know, and then someone explained to me. You know, one of the referees, some really, you know, I mean, I've talked to some refs, you know, in Vegas, some, like, you know, years back. And I'm like, explain this to me. You know, like, when you make the call, folks, when this happens. And the verdict they gave me was it wasn't player control. How is it not player control? He grabbed it, bounced it. Oh, you're saying that's not full control. Everything in basketball, with certain exceptions, are all borderline. There's no clear cut. So, in other words, if the ref calls a certain style of play, fouls, then the game flows on how the referees call the flow. Not by rule book, but how the referees establish the style of play with the whistle. And then you have to modify. So they'll say these things, oh, they're letting them play tonight. Guys are getting hacked, the shit beat out of them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the playoffs. They're going to let that go. Well, last week it wasn't. And they swallow their whistles in the last 5 seconds. So that means they literally hit a guy's elbow when he pulls up because they're not going to make that call in the last 5 seconds because they don't have the guts to make the call. That is a foul. You're supposed to call it. Nothing is more egregious, borderline, than basketball referees.
Here's a question, and someone posed this to me last week, and I didn't get a chance to talk with you guys about it. Eric brought it up in the sense of rules and how they're implemented. Considering how the game is played now, because you can't touch guys, and a guy named Steph Curry has extended the game, how do you feel that the league will change and bring back the three-point line to make it even more difficult for guys who try three-pointers and they're hitting them to get the game going?
Oh, they're not going to do that because now everyone can shoot the three, right? You know, they call them stretch fours, right? You see a seven-footer knocking threes now these days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's and that's the European influence, right? Because they're not changing that because they want more European players. They bent the rules to change the game to bring in a certain bandwidth of players from across the waters to play within the league. The whole game was literally manipulated to bring in the Euro style. So, in other words, most people here don't scout European leagues, right? You know,
that's
they just
true.
Don't
that's
see
true.
Enough. Right, they just don't. And but if you go over there and you watch the style, but these the leagues though they study their style, and so that's where a guy like Dirk Nowitzki, you know, was able to rack up all those points because the game he came out of Germany, where they don't really have strong pro leagues like they have in other parts of the country, and so you know, like Spain and other places like Greece, you know, Italy, Russia has good pro leagues, you know, no telling now. But then at the time they do. So if you bring in a person and you understand the Euro leagues, France has really good players, you know, Parker, Boris Diaw, on and on we can go, you know. And so the thing being is the way that they've changed the game, Nowitzki was able to fit his style in there. So Kareem, you know, which, again, we can always talk about him. He needs to keep his mind, you know, his mouth off, you know, current players and stop apologizing and make sure that, you know, his sword-wielding son needs to have a conversation first about his behavior before you talk about another NBA player. But that's another story. You don't get a pass, Abdul-Jabbar, man. Come on, bro, on those things. But moving on, when those things happen, he caught Nowitzki and true enough a one-trick pony because of how he fit him. If you were able to merge his style of play, Euro type. So when the NBA started going over to, you know, those European games preseason and playing those little European games, remember that, you know, and they would go overseas and they bring an NBA team over and they go scrimmage. So they were basically able to gauge themselves. In other words, they just changed the style of play. I've always said this, I'll say this a million times. The NBA style of basketball, they have the best basketball player, is still not the best played basketball. It's
that's
the style. That's why they lose in the Olympics or come to challenges. Right? That's
good
why
point.
When they went
good
to the
point.
Olympics last year, they lost a game or two, right? I mean, they got the gold, but I thought they had some close games. They may even got staked the game, I remember. I think they may have lost one last year, right?
Okay.
And so,
yeah,
I think they lost to Nigeria, right? Or somebody beat them. Or gave them a real tough challenge. Right. And that's because basketball is a style of play that the NBA is a style of play. It's not a universal game. It's not the universal style. It's a style. So in other words, a person can say, well, you know, I'm going to go play for. So then they started, you know, changing the league up. They started having all these Popovich clones. Pop-up coaches and GMs everywhere around the league at one time, right?
So that brings up the next question. When it comes to officiating, it seems like you can talk to a basketball official or maybe a ref during a football game, but baseball gives the impression that it's very inflexible. If you look sideways, they throw
that's
your
true.
Ass out. Are both of these premises true, Patrick?
It's true.
True. I agree. I would definitely
true.
Agree with that.
True. And the referees that piss me off most, more than anybody else, are the baseball ones. At least the baseball ones. Because the baseball ones, and here's what pisses me off. If I'm going to see the Yankees play the Red Sox, or my Dodgers play the Giants, and somebody wants to, have an argument about a call, and because, you know, he thinks he's talking about his mama, he's at the game. So I'm going to spend $150 for this clown behind a bag on base to kick a ball play out. That's what pisses me off.
Well, put it this way. Joe West is gone. Finally. Now they got to get rid of Angel Hernandez's incompetent ass. And then maybe, you know, we may get some halfway decent up, but now there's still a few of them that got their ass on their shoulders and rabbit ears. You know, it's a start. Getting rid of Joe West is a start. So, but like I said, Angel Hernandez should be next. He's got to be.
That
Tony, that brings the next question. Is the component of race a big factor when it comes to officiating in any of the major sports? Have you ever seen, has anybody on the thread ever seen out and out abject racism laid upon a player because of a call or lack of a
at
call?
At the pro level? At the pro level, college level?
Yeah.
What level? Pro level, college level? It happened in high school all the time. Pro level, college level.
You know what? My standard reaction to that is Darryl Dawkins.
Okay.
Darryl Dawkins, I think, still holds the record for most personal fouls in a season. And, again, to me, a lot of it was a big-ass black man. And
yeah,
they just felt the need to call on or to make any call. Because
let's reverse engineer that real quickly, Tony, because you mentioned the big black man. Iverson, I used to watch him just get the shit beat out of him. They never blow the whistle.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he could have got 80
That's
points
true.
A game if they called the fouls. And so, Donahue, again, let's go back to what's written. Let's go back to what's documented. Let's go back to what's proven. So it's not our opinion any longer. He literally said his race bias with referees, and they know who to go to. So if you have a player, and I won't say this is the player who actually would do this, if you have a player like J.J. Redick, and when someone reaches on J.J. and they don't call it, and the referee's first name is Earl, and he says, come on, Earl, you missed that one, where the brother goes, MF, you missed that call. And so they're looking for the referees to help them out during the game. A lot of these players literally have survived their careers with the referee support in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
The Steve Kerrs and on as players. Steve Nash,
yep.
mm-hmm. many of them were protected by the stripes. Bird. You know, and the Celtics went 40. The Celtics went 40-1 at home one year.
That's
40
bad.
And one.
Yeah. That's
okay. You know, 40-1. That was the old Boston Garden. I mean, that was the Mikhail Parrish. You know, Cornbread. I don't know if Bread was on that squad, but they went 40-1 at home.
Yeah, Cornbread was on that one. That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
he was coming off the bench.
They brought Mikhail. Yeah, Mikhail was the sixth man, you know, which was, you know, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they had that crazy, good, really good front line, but they went 40-1 at home. I mean, you watch some of those games, my goodness gracious. I mean, whew. You know, and so, you know, Magic made a joke during the 92 Olympic, you know, team photographs, and he was 3 feet away from Jordan, and he said, hey, everybody, what am I doing? And they looked at him, he goes, I'm fouling Michael. And he was 3 feet away from him. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? So that NBA refereeing, man, woof, it's brutal.
Eric, that brings up the next question. Gary, I'll take big black men for $1,000. Now, Draymond Green has earned a reputation as being Rasheed Wallace 2.0.
No, he ain't.
His personality has caused him to get fouled because of what he does or doesn't do in appeasing the refs. Just how bad is it since you've seen some of that up close?
Not as bad as it used to be. Earlier, they were looking for Draymond Green.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was, after an incident with LeBron James, and when in the playoff game, that changed Draymond Green's attitude. Once he got suspended for that one game, it changed the whole dynamic of it. Draymond Green was still part of the hell. Draymond Green was still challenging the officials, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't, he
doesn't confront the offense like he used to.
You know something? I've always said about Draymond Green, I follow him when he first got to Michigan State. I think the guy's an excellent ball player. But, you know, he, at times he always has this bully aspect to him. So I want to talk to my nephew, who was a big-time. He's a big-time basketball fan. And I said, look, Jay, we're playing a different age. There's one guy I know that if he was playing now, he stopped his bullying in one game. You know what that is? Gus Johnson of the Baltimore Bulls.
That's a good one.
Gus Johnson. Yeah. Gus Johnson would get in his face and talk by his mama and damn to say something. You know,
there was many. I mean, Maurice Lucas would have shut it down in a half second.
Yeah.
You know,
don't forget thing one and thing two in Chicago, Norm Van Leer and Jerry Sloan.
Yeah. we don't have to go that far back because Oakley and Mason wasn't having it.
Mason wasn't having it.
But see, Draymond Green gets flagged for this. And this is, again, a subjective thing in basketball refereeing you see in no other sports. Was that a natural basketball movement? So if he goes up in the air and kicks his legs out and hits someone in the groin region and they go to the videotape and call that a not natural move, they have this thing, was that a flagrant one or a flagrant two? There's no clear-cut definition of a flagrant one or flagrant two because that's a referee decision. So if that was the case when Kurt Rambis got mugged by McHale, that was a flagrant 1,000. And all they did was dust. If that was the case, all they did was dust themselves off and got back up and started. No one got ejected. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
we got two free throws and the ball. It's this other thing, too, where if there's a steal and someone's in the open court,
we'll reach out and foul them
and kill the play, right? And then they call that, like, okay, you know, this ruling. And so that's subjective, too. Well, someone was there. Nothing is more subjective and borderline and can swing based on a referee's decision than NBA than basketball refereeing. Totally. And it's like this gentleman's agreement that we're going to float away the game. There's clear-cut rules. Sometimes to travel, we see guys take seven steps in the NBA. Pick up the dribble, carry, no call. Right? And then we'll see another player get bludgeoned to death. Exactly, get bludgeoned to death. But because it's not a star player, the whistle doesn't get blown. And then they can protect certain players.
That's true for that. Definitely true for that.
The Euro, I'll say it before, I'll say it again. The Euro, it has to be a Euro step because you had to deal through seven damn countries to get to the thing.
Yeah.
Uber step, for real.
Yeah.
Because they take the
and gentlemen, I don't care what they call it. That's traveling. Yeah. That is traveling.
I mean, you see guys switch pivot seats like three times. Now, Shaq was impossible to ref. Shaq should have fouled out, you know, almost 75% of his game. The way he used to go into Mutombo's grill with his elbow and forearm every time, willfully.
Yeah.
But they didn't know how to referee Shaq because he relentlessly was punishing his opponent and didn't care, you know, and Magic would describe it when he was in the front office as Shaq's whole goal was to take your damn heart. So if you're going to stay in there, he's going to turn and wheel on you. And it was loveless every time. Many times, those were fouls. Another guy was just getting punished and beat down. And if they had something against that player, say if Dikembe Mutombo was playing statesman and he had goals of building hospitals in Africa one day, maybe he was a little too egalitarian for the league. So go ahead, Shaq, kick his ass because you're more black like we are.
Mike, the only guy he could do that to was Akeem. Akeem didn't give a damn about
him. Oh, the dream would eat his ass up, no question about that. But all these things said, which sport is it where a call most affects the outcome of a game? I've asked it before, but I'll ask it again.
Now, Mike, are you including the city of New Orleans in this, by the way?
Yeah, I got to throw him in for bonus points. No shit.
You're dead on right.
Hey. What? Phoenix still has those fuck you, Ricky Powers rings from
Mike, your personification of the question is answered by one name only. Tom Brady. You can't touch Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
He breathes too hard on him. You can't touch
him. Look at him, man.
Only Giselle can breathe heavy near him.
Oh, shit. I've seen linemen. And the only reason the Eagles won that game, in all honesty, is because they managed to tackle him before he got his hand above his waist. Barnett picked the fumble up. That's probably the best thing he'll ever do in his career. But bottom line, had he got that ball up a little bit higher, the pass would have been called incomplete, or he would have said he just lost possession and it wasn't a fumble. There was a whistle it somehow, and just like we intimate on the Beast Mode, who should have been carrying the Super Bowl, it's the same thing. You're waiting for the official to drop the hanky or drop the whistle or whatever the hell it is that's going to make them say or do something that changes the outcome of the game.
I was going to say that, Eric.
That's right.
He jumped
right.
off everything for Brady. No tuck rule. He doesn't go on this run.
There you
That's
go.
That's right.
There you mm-hmm. go. And guess what? Let me ask you a question. How many times have the tuck rule called since that time?
Well,
three times.
Seen much.
Three mm-hmm. times I've seen it.
They busted dude for creating a Nerf football with air pressure.
He didn't have no balls to begin with, my personal opinion, but that's another story.
They deflated the rock. You know how much you like throwing a Nerf football. I mean, them spirals can fly. Everyone can catch them.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
To answer your question, okay. I've seen three games where tuck rule was used. They were not playoff games. They were just regular season games. None, ironically, involved Tom Brady, but they tried to hype off that so-called tuck rule. And Al Davis was right for once. The tuck rule should be called the fuck rule because the Raiders got fucked in the drive-thru.
the immaculate reception was the greatest, you know, F-a-roo.
Yes, indeed.
You know what I mean? I mean, because two players couldn't touch the rock, right? Back in that NFL. So if it touched Frenchie Fuqua before Jack Tatum cleaned him up, and then Franco came and picked it up, which created the whole Steeler lore. The whole Steeler lore was created off, you know, the immaculate reception. I mean, it's to the point they even got a statue of Franco catching a rock in the Pittsburgh airport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oakland Raiders has got more NFL rules.
You ain't wrong. I wonder why.
I mean, the referee said he caught it, so he caught it.
I agree. It's official. It's official.
Well, gentlemen, before we carry on, I must pass sentence because there's some leftover legal business that we must deal with. And the fact remains that Sister Gal is going to make the high court. She endured some serious shit. And I do mean serious shit. So now that all the evidence has been heard, leave us pass that.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. Oh, God.
If it please the motherfucking court, I hereby charge Senators Cruz, Cotton, Holly, et al. With first-degree felony assholery in the character assassination of Supreme Court Justice
Is that an action word? Is that a verb? Is that an action word?
No, that's an action. That's for damn sure. That's an action word. You can't get more action than that.
Where's the enunciation?
They went to assassinate her character, and I believe by sending to the high court, she should assassinate this. I find these low-life, decrepit, afterbirth, no-business poor motherfuckers guilty. And they should all fry in hog's back for the rest of their lives.
And Mike, quite frankly, if you know how much I despise Tom Cottontail by the remark he made about Judge Brown, if there were Nazis,
yes,
he'd be supporting a Nazi.
Yes.
Somebody should go up there in front of the Senate and do a Chris Rock on his dumb ass.
Republican Party, once again, and not deal with facts. You have three knuckleheads, two females and one male, who need to be out of the party. And these fools will not be out of the party. That's what needs to be done.
Gary, when you're spineless on the Democrat side and they can't get their shit together, and the Heritage Foundation, those are going radio, TV, and also everything, print media, they already stand in line. They got their facts. They got their talking points.
The Republican Party are a bunch of racists, straight up racists, and they show
that's
their cards.
That's on the other side, too, man.
They show their cards this last remix.
Gary, they got some on the other side too now. Don't let the other side get out the hook too.
I get it.
It's one big happy party. They have their own little party. Professor, would you say when a certain former Republican have a party, more Democrats be there than the Republicans, and they be shaking their hands?
Lyndon Baines Johnson, your creator of all your affirmative action, housing, urban development, welfare programs,
actually,
all your
actually
social
programs.
Nixon
did that one.
That are, you know, back to LBJ real quick to finish the point.
Mm-hmm.
LBJ invoked laws. When he signed that civil rights law, he said, I'm going to have niggers be Democrats for 1,000 years after I sign this bill.
That's right.
It's a strategy.
We done lost the South. Don't forget that statement.
Yep.
We done lost the South.
Yep. Civil rights.
No,
housing bill. Yeah.
Lyndon Baines Johnson was that guy that, you know that still, you know, with a gang of legislation for those social programs that many of them still exist today, and the creation of all these departments that weren't existing until he came into play. And he said, by doing this, I'm going to have black folks vote Democratic for the next 1,000 years.
And unfortunately, it's been 50 years that they've been trying to take it apart, and they're trying to do it right now. And they've been playing it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And he's the winner. It was a strategy for votes.
Yeah.
It was a strategy for Joe, because under that same person's watch were many assassinations. No president can claim those.
No question.
All right.
And they say,
so when we
don't think my Medicare, but I don't want that Obama.
This red blue game to what Reggie is saying, you know, we can play blood crip all day, right? You know, the Crips are the Democrats, and you know, the Bloods are the Republicans.
Thank you. Both them bastards
what
love their own, got blood
it's
in
what
their
it
name.
Is.
Both of them. Yeah.
There's a red and blue corner in boxing.
Jim,
you ever know the science of the red and blue corner in boxing? There's a reason why they call it the red and blue corner. All right, I won't cross that bridge. People who want to know will find out, but I can another later date. There's reason there's symbols in people's grills every day. They're just missing.
And you know,
because they don't want to decode them.
Here's a latest ad by some low-life punk-ass wannabe politician in Ohio. He actually had a film taken on the Edmund Pettus Bridge about talking about critical race theory, and it's not important, and people can't teach it. And I can support that. I'm a soldier, and I know what I'm talking about. I'm going, somebody just shot him on the bridge.
Herschel Walker online too. Herschel Walker online too.
Oh,
don't ask about my academics. Herschel Walker.
Well, we already know Herschel's been denied every
nice.
As far
be
back
nice.
As the days of Georgia. They split his personality many years ago.
Be nice to Herschel. It took him 30 years to get him to spell his name right.
Yeah. Well, guys, speaking of that, come April 17th, the league comes back.
Oh, God.
USFL comes back.
That's yeah.
Oh, God.
Looking forward to that.
Right.
We'll play. What the USFL will do.
And Mike, guess who's actually trying to play? And he's going to be Jeff. You know, of all people,
who?
Carol Owens.
No shit. You know what? I ain't mad at him. If anybody could, that brother's cut. And on top of that, he's like the Sharps, the country strong brother. They're built like bricks. And
Mike,
if they could handle it, they could.
Mike, as an old DB, I want one shot at him. That's all. I'm across the middle. One shot at him. Because the shot you took, Mike, you know, the shot you took at 23 and the shot you took at 43 are two different hits, brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right about that shit. Mr. Thomas, meet Mr. Rice. The D cross will make a bitch out of you in a heartbeat. No doubt about it.
Wait, I'm going to tell you, there's going to be some country brother who got two baby mamas, you know, need to be supported to make that hit, to make that money. And guess what? Carol, please.
Bounty.
Get your ass down someplace.
The quicker picker up, make that bounty, baby. I know. That's true. Ain't no question about that shit. But you know what, Professor? I've got to ask the question because I think, and everybody in this thread, you may be knowing a little bit more than some of the others. We have talked for years about how the brothers have been sliced and diced and character assassinated. And it really came to fore with Cam Newton in the 2011 draft. Now, Cam flexed his muscles. He flexed his ego. He gave them John Henry. He slapped a couple of people. But he had his longest yard moment where he was told, you ain't doing this. You can't have your black ass out here winning. You can't have black heroes. Now, this surely may be just speculation on my part, but in your heart of hearts, do you truly believe he was spoken to and told to take a Sonny Liston dive in the Super Bowl?
To a degree, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But see, here's what you're up against with the Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
They were good, but they weren't deep. And to win championships, you got to be deep and good and deep. And once they got past the first wave of guys, basically they were screwed. Once Muhammad left, he only had one real good receiver, and that was Smith. All them other guys were pretenders. And in my humble opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of people in North Carolina relative to the football team that played in Charlotte, they're intentionally inept. They don't spend the right money on the right people. The basketball team, like I keep reminding you all, the basketball team territory in North Carolina is your first 2 gallons of gas. Your first gallon of gas when you leave Charlotte coming to East. It don't matter if you come on Highway 24 or 74. Yeah. Once you bring your first gallon of gas, leaving Charlotte, coming east, one way is directly east, the other way is east, northeast. Either one of them directions, you're running out. You know, you're running out of the Charlotte basketball team area. And football team, I mean, they're here, but they, you know, they've always been suspect on defense, totally inept on offense. And you know, the pressure was on him. He, you know, he may have wanted to call a different, wanted to run the game a different way, but you know, now the coordinator totally run it. They don't, they wouldn't allow him the freedom. You know, just like Air McNair in the Super Bowl, he was not allowed to run until the last part of the game. So what happened?
I was at that game. You're telling the truth. I saw it my own eyes. That play before and the last play was magnificent. They tried. It was like he was running through a damn minefield, and McNair was magnificent. That play should have went for a touchdown because he had broken four or five tackles just to get free and work his way downfield. And I thought, oh, shit, we're going to overtime. And damn Kevin Dyke's bitch ass, how can you run a pattern a yard short, especially in front of the goal line? His foot should have been on the line when the ball was caught. That's how you're supposed to do it when you run them and you run the pattern. You don't even have to count steps. You can see the field. You can see where you got to go. There was something in his path where he could knock the ball down. He should have caught the fucking ball at the goal line. So, actually, it wasn't McNair's fault as much as it was Dyson's fault. I say that being a receiver.
Well, Mike, looking at the bigger picture, they should not even be in that situation because opposing players almost to the man said when he didn't, early in the game, when he did not roll out at least to tackle with on either in either direction early in the game, they had him because they didn't have to chase they didn't have to worry about chasing him. And when he finally came loose, hey, they were trailing by two or three touchdowns or whatever it was. They were trailing.
Yes, they were. They were scared shitless.
I know. Aeneas Williams said when he didn't roll towards me, I could go deep as I wanted to go, do what I wanted to do, et cetera. Had he rolled to his side, you know, that's where the best corner is.
That's right.
So, you know, he along with a strategy set in place by that numbskull of a coach and the coordinator, they didn't take away the best weapon that the other team had. That's one thing the first thing you ever wanted to do.
That's exactly right. So, my fellow conspiracy theorists, I ask you, as I asked the professor, do you believe Cam Newton was told to throw the game?
If you go by that alleged fumble that you recovered, a lot of people would say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nobody else? You know, it's important because we know whoever does or doesn't get selected in the annual Lions Club known as the NFL Draft, it's still contingent upon the brothers to realize that we stand on the shoulders of so many others, like Cam Newton and those before him, to get to this point. And no matter what they do, don't do, it's still in your own steam to do your very best. And I have a feeling that they looked at what was potentially Cam's best and scared the shit out of somebody and they said no. And I believe if Russell Wilson was 6'5 and 255 pounds, they would have said no to him too. So this is the thing that confronts us. Will the field generals get the proper opportunity as Tony always says, to say this stuff, or will they always be blanketed with what? You know, for three letters, that's a big ass word. You know, no matter how many, we all grew up in the draft days. We all grew up looking at film. You know, how many times did we hear the word but? No, we didn't have to hear the word but because we saw the film, and we all know tape don't lie, and we didn't have anybody else to lie to us and tell us that because we knew it. But now, that's a whole different psychology going into this. It's something that abhors me, and it's something that I know I'm going to hear too much of as we get close to my birthday. Patrick Sheets is the day before me, and we hear this bullshit about who can and who can't, and who gets picked and why they get picked. So the bullshit is just about to start. But having that said, yeah, I want to see what happens in the USFL, and I hope PO does catch a couple of passes. Before we get the final thoughts, I want to thank everybody for coming in today and putting some wisdom in the pot. Reggie, set things off for us, if you will.
Well, the young man, as y'all remember, named Lott in Minnesota that was sleeping on the couch, and they busted in up on him. He had a gun. Well, none of the cops who executed that young man will be facing charges. Once again, we have seen this act before. It's like a Shakespeare play, a tragedy at the end. And also, how many people remember the duck boat incident in Missouri where over 63 people perished? Well, guess what? Nobody's going to be charged or held for that negligence of the captain and the three crew people. One young lady's sister lost 9 members of her family, including her husband, children, and others. It amazes me again how a treasonous individual, 45, can walk around here, not be charged with tax evasion. I still ain't heard what's happening in New York, but yet they talking about drinking milk and eating milk and cookies and be a good boy, and you follow the law, and you too can be successful. America, stop lying. I don't want to hear anymore.
Which, anyway.
Okay, Patrick.
I tell you what. A couple of things I want to get on the board as I close out here. We'll keep the lookout for two pictures coming out. They're doing one on the history of the legendary Olympics about Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. Fred had something on his website. I'm interested in seeing the dream was for, they talk about Dick Barnett and Stay Back Baby, and they're doing I'll put one together on him also. And lastly, I want to talk about a chip of my youth in getting involved with athletics, which shipped off today when I found out the death of Tommy Davis of the Dodgers. Tommy Davis was one of my favorite balls. But Tommy Davis brought in the second wave of black ball players with Jackie Robinson and his crew release of Campanella, Charlie Neal, and those guys. Then here comes Johnny Roseboro. Here comes Willie and Tommy Davis.
Al Downing.
Al Downing on our whole crew. And Tommy Davis is from Brooklyn. He was a Brooklyn bred kid and won two batting titles. Outstanding players, always connected with the Dodgers. And peace and blessings to his family.
Okay. No question.
Willie Davis, too. Willie Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Davis, one time with the fast man in the league.
Yeah, Maury Wills, that whole crew.
Maury Wills, that whole crew. That's when they came in. That's when they came in.
Yeah, all those guys.
That's baseball, Eric? Guys. That's baseball back then.
Eric, give us a little something.
Did we lose Mike? We can barely hear you, Mike.
I said, Eric, give us a little something.
Well, you know, I mean, April 4th, 2022, I mean, you know, I think there was a NCAA championship basketball game.
Yes, it was.
That was a diversion. Yeah, that was a diversion because it also was the 54th anniversary of the assassination of one Martin Luther King. And it's a really interesting paradox, you know, not to, you know, delve there because so much has been talked about, you know, the life, the speeches, but very little has ever been the focus around the death and how everything played up. You know, we know about, you know, the Kennedy assassination and the Zapruder film. We know about the affiliation allegedly of, you know, what took place with, you know, Malcolm X. We know what took place with RFK and Sirhan and all this stuff. But the Martin Luther King assassination scenario and how it played out is very rarely dealt with. For all the reasons that the tentacles of the federal government had fingerprints all over it is the prime reason. And, you know, teams that go to the Lorraine Hotel, you know, and, you know, they even turned the MLK Day to NBA Day, you know, or and then I've seen places that had auto sales. Get your 25% discount at the MLK Day auto sale, right? It's become this marketing plan for businesses. Become this day where they have these matinee games in the NBA, right? But April 4th is washed under the bridge for many, many reasons. So I will share this piece because there's a lot to go into detail, which is not the time for it. When these teams, you know, visit the Lorraine Hotel and they, you know, go there and, oh, yeah, this is where Dr. Martin Luther King was killed. Dr. Martin Luther King was literally slaughtered and set up to be in room 306, not because of accident or choice. His security team from the Black Memphis Police was removed that day.
That's
even the reason for the strike was fictitious to bring him to Memphis. It was not it was contrived by the Memphis mayor, the Dixie Mafia out of Memphis that could get the job done. It was all contrived to lure him there. Everything about that was not a legitimate strike, people. That was a situation where two garbage workers, sanitation workers, were sitting in a truck and someone threw the switch and they got crushed in that, which was intentional. It was a lure. The whole operation was a lure. Back to the Lorraine real quick, because people go there and this is the day. When he went to the Lorraine, he had a security force from Black Memphis Police that always protected when he came to Memphis. They got pulled. So he didn't have a security team. All this was all in order, all in alignment to do the dirt. Then he was always given rooms that were internal, not outside. On a second floor corner balcony. Always inside was where he roomed. He had it inside the Lorraine Hotel. There was an area there that, you know, you had to access his room from an internal standpoint. It wasn't a street access. That guy changed last second. Lorraine changed. The lady who goes by the name of Lorraine, his sister, she got some type of call in under the guise that it was his team. To change his internal room, internal access on the first floor, to put him in the corner room where he eventually had the angle for the snipers associated with the Memphis Police and other things. Not James R. Ray, because, you know, we all know he didn't do it. It's been proven he has not done it. He had no capabilities of doing it, was able to take that shot. And that was the place where it all took place. So even that was contrived. So Lorraine, the lady, when she found out that she made the change to that room, she immediately went into a emotional fit and go, what did I do? What did I do? She had a stroke the next day and never recovered. April 5th, that would have been for her. She never recovered because she knew that she gave the gateway. Even while, you know, he's on that balcony with a sniper shot to the jaw, which was symbolically to keep his mouth shut, which also severed his spine and his vocal cords, where he would have never spoke again or walked. You know, lethal. That kind of heinous hate. And while he's on the ground there at the Lorraine, you people go visit, and not knowing it was totally set up to do what took place there, you need to leave that fucking place alone. The person that even had the handkerchief on his jaw was a Fed to ensure he was dead, Earl McCullough. The black man, the one with the handkerchief, was a Fed. Check it out. He wanted to ensure that he was dead. So April 4th took place. And it was by constructs of forces that all were targeted for the central point of what took place there. So out of respect for those who want to know the truth and out of respect for those who know that it's been an anniversary to take place, I share these facts to let you know that the Lorraine Hotel is not a place of visitation. It was a place that was perfectly conducive and set up to be the place for the killing.
And I will add to that, in 2027, all the details of what Martin Luther King like will come out, will be exposed by the government.
It's already exposed. You know, I mean, you can go right now and just see it. There's volumes out there right now. I mean, I could go way in to want really actual stuff, reference it to I'm blue in the face of what's taking place. But no one talks about the assassination. That's why, because Clyde Tolson, Hoover's number two, his lover, that Meyer Lansky and them took pictures of, why he never went after the mob.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Never went after the mob. Mob got strong under Hoover. Because they had pictures of him, you know, doing his funny style stuff. Because he hung out at mob hotels. And Meyer Lansky, you know, they blackmailed him. That's why he always said mafias don't exist. There's no such thing as organized crime. So when RFK went after them real hard, you know, the only person that, you know, Hoover and LBJ hated more than Martin Luther King was RFK. And so with that, you know, documented. So with that took place, Clyde Tolson, Hoover's, you know, dinner friend, number two in charge of the FBI. There's photographs of him days before King comes to Memphis, meeting with the Memphis police chief to make sure the hoorah gets pulled off.
Son of a bitch.
All right.
That was my senior trip. Junior high school, 143. I was down there, and we didn't get back home until 3 o'clock in the morning. My pop picked me up from the George Washington bus station, drove through Harlem.
You're light, Mike. You're light.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was our senior trip coming to D.C. from New York City, junior high school, 143. Coming back home, we got home late. Pop picked me up from the bus station. Drove me through Harlem when we saw the carnage. It was just mind-numbing. But it was history, and it was another reminder that, you know, later on we would find out what Dick Gregory knew, and that period of time knew, where he actually exposed it all and told them that he moved out the way so they could get a better shot at his ass. That was fucked up.
Yeah, they were all in it. You know, Earl McCullough, like I said, the guy who's literally up there, in melanin, afro, the look of the day, with the, you know, they put the handkerchief over his jaw. He was just there for one reason. He was a Fed. And he was there for one reason, to confirm he was dead. And also, the hoorah was pulled off that he was supposed to go to St. Joseph's Hospital. Even that was the hospital, if he lived, they would have taken him to, and there was a guarantee and testimonial live from those who participated in it that he would never leave St. Joseph Hotel alive. It was just 100% the whole Memphis scenario, from those invaders who raided the so-called march to the march itself, was all contrived to get one man there for one job. And he had enough instincts to know in his last speech that everything was working against him. That's why he said, hey, you know, hey, my eyes have seen it. Because it was everything about that whole scenario, the whole construction of the process was to maim, hurt, and assassinate one man. None of that was legitimate. None of that was an honest tip. And Lorraine, like I said, she knew it. She switched that room. And she took them from the interior to the exterior and put them on the corner. And that's where, you know, they were able to set up shop. You know, and they had already set up shop. They had already worked with the local fire department. They already had the angle There was brothers who was working maintenance at the shooting range who knew, seen the rifle. They seen when the rifle got passed. James Earl was nowhere near any of that. But
that's
it was all
true.
There. But see, it all started with a room change.
Yeah.
And Lorraine, literally, less than 24 hours, when she knew, she lost it. What did I do? But she knew that when she switched that room, she got played in a heinous way.
I remember my classmate.
And she didn't live. And she didn't last long after that. So that name Lorraine, learn about Lorraine and what happened to her when she did that room switch.
I remember my classmate.
Rest in peace, brother. You know, rest in peace. I mean, April 4th, you know, they can have their NC2A tournament. It's the 54th anniversary of what you've done. And, yes, we honor your day, this and that and the other, but also the constructs that put that in order were heinous. And then it's really rough to know that people who were in your inner circle got absorbed by the government that you were going against, but also the government at that time who put you in that position. You got to wonder about them people. And I'll leave it
you
there.
You know, it makes you want to holler. Makes you want to holler, no question. Professor, please throw something in the pot. Thank you for talking about Cam Newton so honestly, because I truly believe he was talked to as well. I can't prove it, but I feel it in my bones. And you know, he who feels it definitely knows it.
Well, first of all, to continue on what Eric was saying, you know, among the suspicious ones in the circle is one Jesse Jackson. And there's a rift between him and the family because he had blood on his foot when he landed in Chicago. But when he left Memphis, he didn't have blood on his foot. So, you know, I just leave that there. But also yesterday was the 107th anniversary of the birth of one John B. McClendon Jr., who was born in Wichita, Kansas. And he is the man, as I posted on Facebook actually last night, he's the man who taught the world how to play basketball. I don't know how many people got lost on Monday when Kansas was playing Carolina. But
right.
I had the quote discussion argument with this person Saturday about the significance of if Kansas and Carolina met. So, you know, that's where Dr. Naismith was teaching when he met Coach McClendon. And Coach McClendon not only taught Dean Smith a four-point offense, he taught him offensive principles as well as defensive principles. And to his credit, one Dean Smith screwed both of them up to the point that now we have shot clocks. And he, you know, because I remember the conversation, he was like, you know, well, Coach, what was his 30-second shot do to you? He said, nothing. He's shooting 20. You should be in position in 15 seconds, and in 20 seconds, shot to be up either in or being rebounded. That's how fast the game is going. And needless to say, he's the only man that's in the Hall of Fame as a contributor, as a coach, and as a coach,
yep.
Because he and his teams from the late 57, 58, 59, all in the Hall of Fame. And a certain irony about that, and Eric will know this, most of those guys are about the same age, so he basically took the same bunch of guys each of those 3 years to the NAIA championship and won with them. And after they graduated, he left Tennessee State. But, you know, I just say, you know, I miss him calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning asking questions. And he's been gone almost 22 years.
Yeah, they were the first to three-peat. There was no such thing as three-peats back then. You know, USF won 55-56,
right,
with Russell, right? But they were the first to three-peat, you know, at that time, right? There was no such thing Arbat got his fast break principles from too for that Celtics run that they had. Because he could run that style until Russell showed up. But, you know, again, when you're a championship team and then to get in the NAIA tournament, he did a favor for Chuck Taylor. Right, yeah. You know, Chuck, and he told Chuck, "Hey, listen, I'll do you know, he of the Converse brand," and he said, "Listen, you know, I just do me a favor, get. We'd like to play in a national tournament." So Chuck said, "I can make it happen. I can bring all the HBCU teams in." So they had all the HBCU teams knock each other off. Tennessee State always came through, you know. And I talked to Sonny Hill, played for one of those HBCU teams, and you know that couldn't get past the Coach McLendon teams. He still was feeling the pain from that, you know? Yeah, he was still feeling the pain from that, which was interesting to me. You know, and I mentioned Coach McLendon's name, and, you know, and it was almost as if, you know, he was back as a player, you know, when we had a, you know, quick conversation. So, you know, there's a legacy there that is just unbendable. But, again, if you, you know, again, if you can have your team go into the Hall of Fame as a coach, your team's, you know, you don't need to be in yourself personally. He's already in. I mean, himself, you know, as a contributor. And the reason why he was in the contributor because he worked for Converse on that national tour. There was a time where Converse was the lead thing, everything with basketball back to Chuck Taylor. And Chuck Taylor is the one that put the NAIA together. So this is where the foresight comes in, where I talk about psychic energy, because that was what was predicated. And then when they did the HBCU All-Star game, you know, I watched a few minutes, you know, the first part of it just to see what the setup was and how they were going to align everything out. You know, and they showed, you know, Coach McLendon with his 10 TSU teams. I can see my dad in those photos and the rest of his teammates, you know, taking the notations. What he was doing then, and what's not too common as well, by having them brothers in a huddle and drawing up, you know, information on a document so they could transcend that information was a form of psychic energy, which I mentioned, that they just don't miss. So this person had a long-term view of how things would shift. He wasn't concerned about, you know, the right here, right now, because he could have coached anywhere. He was projecting what he was going to be able to do in a brand called Fast Break, which he designed. They talked four corners, which is such a joke, because they did run the four corners, the style. It's basically what they call in the NBA a 1-4 flat. And what that means is that, and NBA players, you know, out there listening, they kind of know what that is. That's just basically the point guard runs that they spread the floor, the wing shoot, and it's a 1-4 basic offense. You see in the movie with Shaq, I think it's Blue Chips, where he talks to, Penny Holloway goes to the coach and says, "Hey, man, listen, man, we got to run the 1-4 offense, coach." You know, he said, "We got to get out of this offense, man. You want me to get my game up? We got to run this 1-4. See, that's Coach McLendon again. So the 1-4 was basically people in four corners, a point guard running the rock. But it wasn't meant to stall and hold the ball for 90 minutes like Dean Smith did. Now, Dean Smith went to Kansas. He went to Kansas, and he followed Coach McLendon, who was a student of James Naismith, who, you know, created the game, and which, again, is the thing that envies most people about Coach McLendon, because he actually was a student of James Naismith, the creator. No one can claim that as well. So all those people that followed him at Kansas, like Dean Smith, who went to Kansas, they knew who he was. They knew what he had put in play, but he was under the radar at the, you know, the HBCU, the black colleges, and he chose to. He went to Kansas because he could go there because he had the Native American heritage, which would allow him, his mother, Hiawatha Indian, which would allow him to go to the University of Kansas as a black man back in that time. You know how they do these designations even to this day, the Native tribes. And that's why he took the Kansas, rather, that's why he ended up there. But then he took that information and knowledge and went to the brothers and sisters and worked in the community all those years to put in that work, and his brand came out. So incredible legacy, all this taking place, but it was also a format of someone who had a vision. My father just always referred to him as an innovator. He's an innovator, an innovator, an innovator. That was the word. And all companies that survive business-wise today, like tech firms, you know, they're all about innovation. You know, I mean, Yahoo, Google, these places like that, they want to have tech better 10 seconds ago than they have currently. So if you're not innovating, you're losing. So that was where that was a little bit different. So, again, this was predisposed to have that happen. So Fred spoke to it real well. I know I can chime in because I have direct contact, direct, you know, association. But everything he says is correct, you know, in terms of that aspect. So, you know, thanks for letting me weigh in, fellas. I appreciate that.
Always. www.blackheritagereview.
books, bric-a-brac, T-shirts. Every day is always a good day.
Coffee mugs, like, headbands, wristbands, flip socks.
Coffee mug sounds like a good idea. I'm feeling the coffee
visors. I want one of those Gary Grant. I want one of those Gary visors he's pushing out there in the East Bay.
See, there you go. Get that Gary visor. Gee, what you say? How many be good for you?
Yes, sir.
How many visors be good for you?
All right. there's a woman named Joan Elizabeth Higginbottom.
Mm-hmm.
She is the first SIU Carbondale graduate who was in the NASA space program. The first Saluki to be so. He flew in the space shuttle Discovery. We honor Joan the third black woman to fly the space shuttle in the International Space Station. She's also a Delta Sigma Theta sorority member, graduate of Florida Institute of Technology. So congratulations to retired astronaut Joan Elizabeth Higginbottom, SIU Saluki.
Roof, roof.
There we go, 1 o'clock. The music box may be home while I gotta buy another website so I can download the music.
Yeah, I'll talk to you about that tomorrow, G, about the music site. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, to quote my man Sun Ra, space is the place. So, good on that, sister gal. Taking it to another level. Big T, come on with it.
From this is coming from out of Vegas. Money has been pouring in at sportsbooks of combination on Marcus Scott, Elvis Woods to win the Masters. Entering this week, the betting action on the odds to win the Masters at Caesars Sportsbook is fairly evenly distributed between Little Mr. Eldrick and two top-tier contenders, Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler. Only 16 bets separated Thomas, Scheffler, and Woods as of Tuesday afternoon. By Wednesday, the gap has widened significantly.
Say that again, T. Come in a little scratchy. Say that again.
We get you, T.
Okay, well, basically, everybody is, and then Mama is betting on the Eldrick to have a long shoot to win the Masters.
The cyborg, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Old Nike himself.
Okay. Well, having said all of that, we put together a pretty good show tonight, and I want to thank the brothers as always. But there is something that sticks in my craw. I got some of that out my system earlier this week. But you got to know, no matter what, there's always some dick, dastardly shit lurking below everything. I'll be back Sunday to play some more music and hopefully bring my emotional scales back to balance. But just because it's in cellulite doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Tell me, do you know the difference between a black man and a nigger?
No.
Most niggers don't. Next, please. So tell me, Officer Winston, what's the difference between a black man and a nigger?
Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
Hi. Thanks for coming in. So, Officer Stevens, tell me, do you know the difference between a black man and a nigger?
The nigger's the one that would even answer that question.
Most undercover cops don't know what they're doing because it's a day gig. I'm looking for somebody who will go under and stay under. 6 months, year, 5 years.
What does he have to do?
Buy drugs, sell drugs, set up the people that I want to bust.
No, he's a snitch.
He's a drug dealer. He's a criminal. He's a scumbag. But most importantly, he's a scumbag for the right side. You will be on loan to the DEA, and you will report directly to me.
I've stayed away from this kind of stuff all my life. Drugs and stuff. I've never even had a drink. I never have, and I never will.
Does that have anything to do with your father being killed robbing a liquor store when you were 10 years old? I'm God. I know everything. Why did you join the force?
Because I wanted to be of some use, because I wanted to make a difference somehow.
Have you ever taken a look at your psychological profile? You know, you score almost exactly like a criminal. Look at this. Resents authority, rigid moral code, but with no underlying system of values, insufficiently developed sense of self. Look at this. Look at these scores. Look at all the rage. Look at all the repressed violence. I'm telling you. Undercover, all your faults will become virtues. You'll be a star there, John. You'll do a lot more good there than you ever would have in uniform. You will be of use. You will make a difference. Those guys, after work, they went home to their wife and their kids. And then one day on the street, they forgot where they were, and now they're dead. But you will never go home, so you won't forget. Because there's only one rule in this game, John.